4, 3, 2.
Open mine eyes that I may see glimpses of truth that lasts for me. Open mine eyes, illumine me, Spirit divine.
Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and on this program I present the possibilities of change and transformation and how we are moving into a new era of consciousness. And much of this has to do with old traditions coming forward, secret traditions, things that are part of now our evolutionary process. And I have a very interesting guest tonight. Her name is Bharavi, and she is also one of the bloggers on the newrealities.com website, so you can go under blog and look for her writings, which I'm very honored to have on the website. Welcome to the show, Bharavi.
Thank you, Ellen. Nice to be here.
You know, I'm very interested in your tradition and history, because as you've been writing on the website and we've been speaking about, it's you're truly connected to the old line of Tantra, the Kashmiri Shaivism. And many people today have a strange understanding of Tantra. And you and your teacher, Maitreya, have a more classical version. How would you define what real Tantra is?
Well, real Tantra, it comes from a lineage, and that's really what the most important part that we stress in Tantra, that you are part of a lineage, part of a family, part of a hierarchy. And so this tradition has been handed down from teacher to disciple from time unknown. We don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, what we have are just different branches of Tantra, Kashmir Shaivism, Vajrayana Buddhism, Hindu Tantra, you know, all forms of Tantra. I've even found Tantra in every country that I've traveled in. We're all out there.
But what does it have in common, all these things? What makes them Tantra?
Well, the principle that we have in India, in Hindu philosophy of Shiva and Shakti, of the male and the female energies as one, and that's predominant in almost every culture that I've found. Everywhere you go, the union of the self with the cosmos, you know, the microcosm with the microcosm, all of that, all of those philosophies are found in different forms. So Tantra exists as a tradition that's always been there. What separates us, and it may not even separate from a lot of people, is that we definitely do follow a family lineage.
And
from that, then the teachings come out.
And this family lineage is pretty much an oral tradition in a way. I mean, there's been some writings about it, but mostly it's given from teacher to student, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially a lot of the secret teachings are just from teacher to student. What's written down, you know, in this day and age, a lot of tantras are written down. And the mantras are all over the internet, and you can get a book, and you can find it there. But what's missing is the direct transmission, the spiritual kiss from the teacher to the student. And a lot of teachings, a lot of syllables, a lot of exercises, a lot of the process, it's not going to be published, you know, totally in a book or on the internet.
The key, I think, you said is this initiation, because you have to have power, shakti, or some kind of energy in order to pass that on. So you can do the practices, but unless you've been, in a way, opened up to something, you don't get the full energy of that teaching.
Right, that's right. Without the initiation, seed really can't grow.
Mm-hmm.
So you may find a teaching somewhere and try to understand it and practice it, and maybe on an intellectual level you can get to a certain point, or maybe to a physical level, like doing yoga. If you do a pose over and over again hundreds or thousands of times, you can get it and you'll feel comfortable in it. But the transmission is what will really take you to a different level. And a lot faster, too, because it's directly, it's given to you. It's It's the energy. It's
and the transmission can only come from someone who's been initiated, of course, but if we trace this back, it goes back to some kind of direct connection with the divine. That's the original initiation, right?
Right, because the divine is here. The divine is here right now, and really, where is the origination of that? But right now, with a live being in front of you, or, I mean, an initiation can be done from a live being. I've had initiations done on the subtle level as well, in dreams, in meditation. So initiation in whatever form we're talking about. But that initiation is really important in this path.
But you have a teacher. Can you just... He had a teacher, Sri Mali, who a friend of mine published some books on in India called Why Power. tell me about your teacher and that lineage, that particular lineage that you're a part of.
Okay. So, Gurudev, the fellow you're talking about, when he was alive, he was known as...
Oh, also called Sri Mali, right?
Okay, yeah, Sri Mali. And we call him Gurudev. Or his full name was Dr. Narayan Datta Sri Mali. And he's no longer in body.
Did you meet him?
No, I didn't have a chance to meet him.
Oh, okay.
But I think he passed in 97, and I've just started sometimes in the past few years.
Okay.
At least in this incarnation. And his disciple, direct disciple, he's known as Maitreya. And Maitreya has three names. He has Maitreya, and his pen name is Swami Madhusudana Saraswati, and he writes in the local language of Telugu in the state of Andhra Pradesh. And then there's also his third name that he goes by is Aghori Karpara. And Aghori Karpara is a name for most of his incarnations in the past.
It's Aghori Karpa? He's an Aghori then, too.
Mm-hmm. He's an Aghori. So we have Aghori...
Right.
In the name when it
is. And we'll talk about what Aghori is in a little bit, but yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So our stream comes from basically through Gurudev, and we call him Nikileshwara, or Nikila, and so that's why most of our things you'll find Nikila Tantras and all these things.
Uh-huh.
Nikila means everything. So Gurudev or Sri Mali, he's our guru. He's really our master. And
he's your teacher's teacher, and your teacher always refers to him as the master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And
right.
Even though Maitreya is alive, and definitely Gurudev is working through him, he still doesn't want to be called as, you know, a guru or a teacher. Because really, Gurudev is still working through us in such a profound way that you can never really say that, you know.
Well, what I think people should know about Gurudev is that it wasn't like the bhakti traditions, which is a service worship thing. Gurudev was quite a powerful individual. He was actually called a tantrika, an Aghori tantrika, and he was a manifesting being. Can you talk about some of the miracles that Gurudev had performed and some of the manifestations?
I mean, there's just some that I've seen since I've been in this family.
What have you seen?
Little things here and there, but that really make a big difference. Like, we would do fire worships, and in fire worships, we're offering pots of ghee and pots of oil into a fire, offering our blessings and asking Mother to help us and whatever it is we were doing. Well, I would sit there, and after hours and hours on end, the pot of ghee would not ever get empty. It was refilling itself totally, and he was there, you know, and little things like that happen all the time. Whenever we're in a bind in a situation, he's the one that, whether it may be something on a material level, he brings us money. Essentially, we don't really do anything from a working standpoint, what people think. But he takes care of us in such a way that we are able to serve. I mean, we have a big duty of service, of seva, actually, even on the tantric path, to write his book.
Gurudev himself did, and while he was alive, he had quite an amazing life, didn't he? Do you have any stories about his life there? Because what I read about him, he performed a lot of... I mean, he had a lot of power. He could knock people down with his power.
Right, right. You would probably be better when you talk to Maitreya, he would probably have better stories for you. Because I haven't, because like I said, I wasn't alive to see any of his, and...
Right. So how does the initiation work? And we'll talk a little bit more specific about Tantra, but how did Gurudev give the energy to Maitreya? And what kind of way did these initiations take place?
I don't know how he gave the energy to Maitreya. He just basically when the time was right, he started mm-hmm. appearing to him in such a way, and that from a lot of his energies from his sadhana that he did prior to doing tantra, he had some energy. And from that, he was really, I guess, on the quest. And he attracted Gurudev, and from his energy, he came to him in form, in physical form. And he gave mm-hmm. him initiation. Tantric initiation in our family will, you know, has to do usually with handing over a mantra, sometimes mm-hmm. touching on the forehead at mm-hmm. the point of the third eye, using, you know, the thumb or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So it's very simple as that. It could just be handing a mantra. Mm-hmm. From that, the level of where the spiritual practitioner is, where the sadhak or sadhaki is, what they do with that is, you know, it's up to them. And he mm-hmm. was at such a point of such deep sadhana that that initiation opened him up to realize a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot
like
of
what things are that? I mean, if you can be a little specific, mm-hmm. then people get an idea of the level he's at spiritually.
Well, he's able to recollect all his tantras from his past lives, like all mm-hmm. mantras, all processes. Tantra, we also mean the actual teaching itself, the vidya, mm-hmm. the teaching. So he can, on the fly, can now remember all of that information and produce the book so that we can now preserve the knowledge.
Your teacher, Maitreya, can.
Mm-hmm, Maitreya can do that. He just sits mm-hmm. in meditation. I mean, mm-hmm. and we're not talking about sitting. He just sits down and starts flowing, and everything starts coming out. And from this energy, he's able to pass on all the knowledge to all of us. You know, all of, mm-hmm. I mean, the thousands of people that follow him and read his books or whatever it is. So the energy is just, it's just being directed through him.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people have come back to him and have said that they've achieved the results of what they wanted to do. You know, whatever it may be, a worldly result or uh-huh. a spiritual result.
Sometimes he gives them the power or the tools to achieve mm-hmm. what they want to in the world.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. On the spiritual world or the subtle world or whatever it may be. So he's just, he's the vehicle for that.
Right.
And that's what the initiation does. Through him, he can initiate so many other people.
But it opens you up to, like, you were initiated by Maitreya, right?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that initiation?
Sure. Yeah. I got initiation from him. Actually, in vision, what we call darshan, so a vision in a dream. Gurudev himself had given me the vision of Maitreya even before I met him, a few months before I met him. Mm. I had a sense that I was going to meet somebody. I had a feeling it was coming. I had, you know, some ideas in my mind what it was going to be, but nothing for real yet. So for me, when I was in America, I had a dream of this guy, this Indian guy sitting in an apartment wearing traditional Indian clothes, smoking a cigarette, and just giving me a lecture. I couldn't hear any voices, and I just blew it off when I woke up because I was wondering, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
I went back to India, and again, I was just really just creating so much heat for my practice that I was going to finally meet a teacher, or the right teacher. I had met several teachers, but...
You were doing what kind of practice?
All tantric practice, Sri Vidya, mostly.
Which means what, chanting, or...?
Chanting... I was doing a lot of different things, doing mantras, dances...
Right.
Visualizations, all kinds of things.
Just stuff that you came on your own. You didn't have a formal teacher?
No, that I did. I also came from another lineage, a Sri Vidya lineage.
What lineage was that? I'm just curious.
That's also a Kala lineage. It's the name of the guru there was Amritandanatha, Guruji from Devipuram.
Oh.
It's also in South India.
I see. I don't know who that is. So, but then you met your teacher in a dream, and then...
Met him in the dream, and then I was at that temple, the Devipuram temple, and like I said, I could feel that I was going to meet my teacher. And then he came. He appeared. He was there. They had hired him to do some inauguration of a Shiva temple. They hired him, and Maitreya was there. And my first reaction was, well, this fellow is very highly energetic, and maybe this could be the one. But on a physical level, he didn't look like what I had expected. I had some expectation of what a great Aghori teacher would look like, physically strong and all kinds of things. Some expectations on a physical level. But after a few days, I talked to him, and we talked about, you know, what we were, what kind of tantrics we were. And he said he was an Aghori, and he knew I was a Bhairavi, which means that a female practitioner on the path. And
the Aghori path, the left path.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Left-hand path of Tantra. And then finally, on the very last day, after 5 days of him doing rituals and inaugurating the temple, I sat down and talked with him. And then the first thing he said to me when I sat down at his feet was, he said, my Gurudev brought you here to complete your sadhana, your spiritual practice.
Uh-huh.
And at that moment, you know, so much energy came into me. Like beams of light just went into me. And he said, I'm going to give you a mantra. And he gave me what's called a guru mantra that allows you to, you know, have a vision of your teacher, meaning the vision of Gurudev. But I had already forgotten that I had a vision of him, this guy sitting in front of me. And he was just like reinforcing everything that was already happening. I had forgotten about the dream darshan that I already had. But when I got that mantra, you know, that really, like, light started to go off and, you know, in a different way. And I had received so many initiations from other teachers before. But this one, there was something unique about it, something very complete.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to the Pitam, the home temple, about 3 weeks later, I saw everything. I sat down on the floor, and that vision that came back to me a few months later that I had in that dream came true. So any doubts that I had that this was not going to be my teacher, all those doubts were erased. You know, it was like I was 99.99% true, but if I had one little bit of doubt left, it was gone.
So there you are. You were suddenly found your home, Satguru, I guess they call it, and you found the path that you're on, which is an Aghori path, which is a left-hand path of spirituality. Now, it's left-hand path means that you do things that are forbidden by most of the religion, right? I mean, most of Hindu. Well, talk about the things you do as an Aghori.
Okay. Well, in the Aghori path, we just do things that are just kind of outside the social convention of you know, in the Hindu culture, that's what we can say, outside the social convention. They're forbidden in the sense that on traditional right-hand path, we're just not going to partake in them as part of your spiritual path. So there are things such as drinking alcohol, eating meat, eating fish, drinking out of and eating out of skulls, using cannabis products, you know, not taking a bath.
At times you do take a bath too.
Right. I mean, but it's not a necessity. Like all of, you know, it's not a requirement. In right-hand tantra, we have to take a bath before we do a lot of things.
Right.
The
biggest one, though, is sexual practices, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one, too. Because and totally in the right-hand path of tantra, on the extreme right, we talk about celibacy as a practice. Whereas on the left-hand path, it's not. It's very much an important part of the practice. There are five elements in tantric sadhana, and one of them involves, like I had mentioned, eating meat, fish, drinking wine, doing several postures, mudras, and maituna, which is sexual intercourse. So these five things together make a complete practice.
You know, in Robert Savoto's book, you know that book?
Mm-hmm.
He talks about sexual intercourse with dead bodies. Is that part of if you want to share?
Yeah, that's a practice. I haven't done it.
What does all that do? I mean, what's the purpose? I mean, it must give you some kind of energetic awakening, though, right?
Right. I mean, it's definitely when done properly under guidance of an authentic teacher with initiation and the ability to withstand all the hindrances that can come when you do these practices, you will obtain a lot of energies. And we call these siddhis, attainment of an energy. And when you obtain these siddhis or these energies, then one person, you know, can get the result that they wanted, whatever it may be. But what happens in the left-hand path, it's just very fast, because by doing these kind of practices, the experience is very direct. Because we're using so many objects and things that are found on this physical world.
But that's the danger also, is that because it's so fast and because the cities come, someone who's not very evolved will use that to gratify the ego.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Totally for gratification of the ego, selfish motives, you know, and sometimes they can just and just slip up. And if they slip up, then they can also just kind of ruin the sadhana.
Well, I see it as, like, the higher you climb, the further you fall, you know?
Right. Yeah,
so,
that's pretty much what can happen.
So you can build up a lot of energy, but if it gets corrupted somehow, it can really, take you down into the depths. So how does one on the Gauri path maintain one's distance from one's selfish ego?
Well, a big principle in this path is that, one, we're trying to destroy the ego. Maitreya will say this a lot. We're just trying to, like, kill the ego, destroy the ego. So there's a death involved, like a death of the ego that's going on while you're on the path.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there's a lot of, symbolism of death and things like that. But it's a beautiful experience, because when one is able to kill their ego or dissolve their ego, then the divine grace can flow. It can really flow.
But when you're involved in sexual practice, let's say, it is pleasurable, right? I mean, it involves... And is it the ego that's getting the pleasure, or is it... I mean, how do you get distance from that part of body gratification?
Well, the pleasure is like... just a product of it, but it's not what the ego is not desiring the pleasure. A person that's doing this kind of practice, their goal is for absolute reality. So if there is any kind of desire that we would have left in us, then that would be it, for liberation or absolute reality, whatever you want to call it. And pleasure is a result of that, but that's not the sole reason why we're doing it.
As opposed to why most people would engage in sexual practices, it's
right.
Just for pure pleasure. So, this path is what they call red tantra as opposed to white tantra. So, I would think in your tradition there are actually specific practices that one would do that builds the energy, builds up the city in that red tantra tradition. Like, I mean, could you give an example of some of the stuff you do?
Well, first you'll have to develop a lot of your basic energies. Like this is, you'd have to do a lot of yoga, a lot of
like
Kriya yoga, breathing.
Physical yoga, you mean?
Yeah, physical yoga, because we definitely need to have a sound body that's able to withstand the energies.
I think because when the energies arise, like the Kundalini energy, if the body's not strong, then what happens?
Well, people can get sick. Physically sick, you can get illnesses, you can have mental problems, emotional problems, or injuries, just things that you can get in a yoga class, you can get them in tantric practices if you're not ready. A lot of it's going to happen in the mind, though. Really, the destruction of the mind is going on, and so we like to say you need to have some kind of advanced practice before you even go into these kind of tantric practices.
So if you've done a lot of this yoga of the mind and you've seen it, like I don't know, I've had some experiences where, I would see things or hear things, but also go beyond that, seeing that's a level of illusion, I think in a way that's a yoga practice, where what you think you see and hear is part of actually the old reality, and who we really are is the transcending observer.
I agree.
And I think from that place, then we can start have initiations, because in a way you can't take any of it seriously, the illusions of the world.
Right. And even if you're going to have practices, even while you're doing practice, even if you are initiated, still your impressions are going to come out when you're doing your practice, because there's still some kind of your deep inner suppressions are going to come out during the practice anyway. So those also become another illusion or a delusion while you're practicing.
Like, so the anger and sadness and all the stuff that's been stuffed down in the ego is acted out because you're building the energy. I mean, in your diaries, as you've written on the website, it seems like a lot of that stuff came out of you.
Mm-hmm. It came out, like, very quickly. And this is what happens when you get initiation and you work very deeply with a master. These are going to come out very fast. And a lot of people can't handle it if, one, they don't realize where it's coming from. They don't realize that it came from themselves. You know, we go on blaming the outside and relatives and friends or whatever it was, the world, the universe, our boss, our husband, our wife, but it came from us. You know, it came solely from us. And we just have to, like, let it come out, and it will.
So that's been your practice, and I guess more stuff keeps coming up, but you've reached a level where you can now teach, and you initiate people as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bhante gave me the energies to initiate people in lots of things, lots of different kind of practices, lots of mantras. Mostly we're talking about mantra initiation and yogic initiations that are related to tantra.
Let's say we do like a yogic practice. I mean, what is it, the goal that we were hoping to achieve? Like, you give me a mantra, then what am I hope to accomplish with that mantra?
Well, that would depend on you. Because the first thing we do, we would give you a mantra so that you would get in touch with the lineage, with Guru. And then from there, a lot of people come with us with their question, like, you know, I need some help in something, something, something. And then we give them a mantra for that. And then there's just people that just say, well, I just really just, you know, I just want to leave it up to you. And then we'll give you a mantra based on your past karmas, your impressions in life, and what it is that, you know, we can guide you in that direction. So it depends. You know, there are millions and millions of mantras out there for so many different things. Depends all on where you are, what's your desire at that point in time.
But when we go beyond desire, I mean, what's your ultimate goal? Where do we want to go?
Absolute reality.
Or what does that mean to you?
Moksha will be, the cessation of the cycle of birth and death. So in Hindu philosophy, we believe in reincarnation. So that we were moving towards a state where we don't have to take any more human births. From not taking human births, did we go into a state of only existing on the subtle level. From there you go into the causal level. And then from there the ego finally dissolves into this creation or into the universe, and that would be dissolution of the ego.
So what state of mind do you have to be in to realize that moksha?
You just need to be very evolved. The state of mind is that is your goal. And that's, you know, it's a state of mind that pervades everything that you do. The state of in your brain, your mind, and your emotions in your mind, and your actions in your mind.
Well, how do you know you're not there? How do you know you haven't achieved it? Or how do you know when you have?
That's for everyone to find out, really. One will know. One will know.
I mean, isn't it just happened in a moment? I've met people, I think, who have achieved the level of absolute reality or relatively absolute reality.
Right. Then if that's your instinct.
Well, but where are you? How far do you think you are? I mean, what do you need? I'm just curious because you've done all these practices. Mm-hmm. You've been initiated. You've let all your stuff, maybe not all your stuff, but you've let stuff come up. You've looked at it. You have cities. So where are you in your evolution?
Well, I still say I'm growing, you know. I still say I'm growing. I'm still on this planet. You know, I have a lot of work to do. Definitely Gurudev wants me to do a lot of work for my growth, you know, for my growth. It's solely for me so that, I can tell. I still have emotions. I'm still a normal person. I get angry here living in my parents' house for a month while I'm visiting in America, you know, like little things like that.
Right. So you think you're enlightened, go home and visit your parents. That's
right, That's the best thing. And I think this was a perfect time for me to realize where I am. And
what about your teacher? Has your teacher realized the state of enlightenment or awakening?
He admits that he's still growing as well. I mean, he definitely admits he's still growing.
But Srimali, Gurudev, has...
He
achieved the absolute reality.
Yeah, he's all-pervasive, for sure. He's not taking another birth. He's Lord Almighty for us, you know. We're very lucky that we have him. And so that's why I said it's not something you can really speak of, because unless you've touched it, it's very hard to just describe what it is. But we have, you know, we have an example there.
Right. You know, a lot of people I talk to about Red Tantra in particular, they want to achieve a sort of a transcendence or realization within the sexual act. Is that something that happens, especially as a Bharave?
It happens naturally. It happens.
In what way?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Well, in the whole, like, this, the whole even concept about what sex is. You know, in Tantra, sex comes basically for three things. For one is for pleasure, which we all know. Two, for progeny, for having babies. And then three, to reach absolute reality or transcend it or whatever way you want to call it. And so it's like it naturally happens, because after reading my diaries, you can read that so many things happened to me on a sexual level that seem actually quite normal. You know, just like some normal relationship that I had, and I moved in with a guy. It could read like that to somebody. But what was happening on my deeper level for me was that it was pushing me up on all the karmic things that I had done in the past. You know, I had to look at it. I had to, like, reflect on what I did prior to coming to India, on who I was, about my sexual life. And when I finally realized it, you know, months after writing all that down, that everything that happened to me happened because of my own ego. And so I had to see my ego again.
Well, how did sexual activity actually help you do that? I mean, what was it, an energetic thing? I don't get the connection.
I mean, there's different ways, yeah. I mean, there are some ways when we would have sex that basically, like, mantras would start going. Like, I would start chanting mantras in my mind that were they weren't even specific, but they're mostly like, I always chant the Gurudev, always. And his mantra would start going. When that starts going, like, energy rises, heat rises, and orgasms come in a way that aren't just, they don't remain in the body.
Mm.
And they go beyond, like in a physical orgasm, you can actually kind of, like, feel where it limits and feel where it starts and stuff. But when you're, you know, when you're ecstatic about the power of the divine, it goes beyond.
Right.
You can actually, you know, feel it going outside of the body. You can feel yourself inside and outside of your body at the same time.
With the orgasm.
Right. And there are sometimes I had orgasms with Maitreya, and he was just holding my hand.
Really?
You know, he would just hold my hand, and we were just lying down. And I was so relaxed, you know, and that's what a lot of this practice, of this tantra, was just learn to relax, you know. The sex isn't all that, it's not such a big deal. Just relax and be happy with your life. And
right. Does that still happen, those orgasmic moments?
Well, yeah.
Well, why has
now.
It changed? What has changed?
Well, since I haven't been in India for a couple months, and we didn't have sex prior to me leaving a few months. He got very sick. So I would, while I was here in the Philippines in America, I would just think about him, you know, and chant his mantra, and I would chant Ogori Karpura, and just call him. And waves of orgasm would just flow through my body. And I was already satisfied, and it's like, well, this is the satisfaction that we go around running around to different partners all our lives looking for. Well, all I had to do was just think about him.
Right.
And the satisfaction, it was already fulfilled, you know?
So in these, like, higher orgasmic moments, do you come back then into this reality with cities?
I think you can, yeah. I mean, definitely, I'm not really trying to get any real siddhis at all. You know, like, the siddhi of having Gurudev in my heart, like, that's enough for me. But you can, you know, definitely you can. If, like, you have a firm intention that you want to get a siddhi, you can, and with the you need the help of your teacher.
Right.
You can chant a mantra millions and millions of times, but again, without the grace of your teacher, he or she may hold you back, because they may think you're not ready, because your ego could still get involved.
Well, in the book I have about Gurudev, Sri Mali, he talks about giving people mantras in order to see the divine feminine presence. Have you had that experience of seeing the divine feminine?
Mm-hmm. Again, like visions in my dreams. And a lot of it was that visions I've had were actually the divine presence was in me. And
right.
I never, like, it was not an outside vision of me looking out, but it was that I was that energy, or I became that energy, or I always was that energy, whatever form it was.
I think you are that energy, especially when you transcend your personality and embrace the divine feminine in you, which is the Shakti, you know, and I think it seems like the generation of your Shakti energy, which is intense, will help you embody the divine feminine presence, and then you could, you know, spread that to other people. So,
that's
what you're here. I mean, it feels like that's part of your mission is to do that, is to embody the feminine.
Yeah. And there was a time, actually, I was trying to resist that having a mission, and try to just kind of be, you know, in seclusion. Because traditionally a Bhairavi would not even, you know, come out in public and do all these. Aghoris and Bhairavis are very private people. Because, like we were talking about, we do things outside of the social convention. But it seems that this incarnation for Maitreya and myself, we're supposed to, especially me, supposed to go out and, you know, embody for it.
Well, the Bhairavis that I've read about also do initiation through sexual intercourse and contact.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of the tradition as well?
It can be. I haven't done it with anyone else. The only sexual contact I've had has been with Maitreya since I've come into this family.
And he initiated you through that sexual contact.
Mm-hmm. Well, he initiated me in so many ways, and that just happens to be one of them. Yeah.
Mm. So you wouldn't do that with, I mean, you're not that kind of Bhairavi that would go in and initiate people with that kind of tradition, because that supposedly has been an awakening for other saints have been initiated by Bhairavis and have had a spiritual awakening due to those connections.
Right. And I'm not saying, you know, at this point in time it's not happening. It hasn't happened. The conditions haven't been proper anyways for it to happen.
Right, and you're still evolving yourself.
Right.
But part of being a Bhairavi, isn't it to collect energy in the womb chakra?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely happens naturally.
I'm always
pregnant, really.
But how do you do that? Is there a certain mantra that you do, or
I think just by being initiated into the path of Tantra, and starting to do your practices, it happens. It happens naturally. You'll actually even be able to physically see a lot of people who are doing a lot of Tantra practices. Their womb gets bigger, men and women.
Mm.
Whether they're pregnant or not, because what happens is you become pregnant with all this
with
energy.
With what?
The divine
pregnant
energy.
With the energy?
Yeah.
So do you feel a particular energy in your womb?
Mm-hmm. It's like you're going through your own rebirth inside of you. You're you're growing inside your own womb. Your spiritual child is you growing inside.
And do you have you given birth to that yet, or are you still growing it?
I'm still growing it, definitely. It's still growing. I've even tried to have like physical birth of children, and that hasn't happened. So maybe it's not time yet for all that. But definitely, my womb is always full, no matter what.
Maitreya
calls me his mother himself.
Maitreya calls you his mother? Ma?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he calls me mom.
But when you say it's full, it is full of Shakti, of energy.
Yeah, full of Shakti.
But what do you do with this Shakti? I mean, I felt that looking at your picture on Facebook. I sensed your Shakti that you were carrying.
It's an energy that allows one to really be that power. And it's not, you know, an egoistic power, but it's like the power of this creation, you know, that we are this creation.
But doesn't it also give you power, I mean, in a non-ego way, to help heal, to have compassion, to connect with other people? It's that power.
Yeah, all that is there, too. I was developing some healing power prior to all this Tantra, and I didn't, you know, I didn't know what Shakti was at that time, and I was starting to do a lot of healing work, you know, massage work and energy work and all those things. And that was just, it was just becoming very natural. And compassion is a big, big part of this path, is really being able to see and feel in each one's hearts that come to me.
But part of the path is actually, for your path as a Bhairavi, Agora, is to collect this womb awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And is that because of the mantras you're doing as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mantras do all this. I mean, the mantras are, you know, very energetic. They really, depending on, you know, it depends which sadhana you're working on, which mantra you're working on, it will have a different effect. But, the you know, the more you do the practice, the more you're invoking that energy inside of you. And you become it. You know, you become that energy.
You know, in your diaries, you talked about a big scene in the beginning of lots of people having intercourse together and the men holding the seed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what was that all about? I mean, what was that?
Okay, that's an actual practice. It's, like I said, not everything is there. That's an actual kala practice from our lineage.
What is the practice?
The chakra,
can you describe it?
Mm-hmm. It's the Bhairavi chakra. And I think, what did he say? There's about 150 men and women. So we didn't actually do this practice in this life, in this incarnation together. We've done it in the past, and we remembered it. And so when it was time to write things down and start letting it out, it all came out.
But what's the practice? Describe it with the 150 men and women.
Okay. So there will mostly be, they're all different kinds of men and women. And, you know, there's no caste system in Tantra. So anyone, if they're on this path, they're chosen by the guru. And the guru of this is the Kalanandanata. And in this case, it would be Agore Karpara. He was a Kalanandanata. And so he chooses people based on their karmic patterns, what they're ready for to be in this room.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily come in with a boyfriend or your husband and wife, really. He can actually choose that person for you based on your karmic pattern. Because, again, we don't want to have any attachments. If you're working with somebody that you're married or close with or, you know, a life partner or whatever, that is somebody that is your Shiva, your Shakti that you're working with to dissolve all your karmas. That's really the sole reason why we do this practice.
Mm.
It's to work through our karmas.
Mm. And what is the practice, though? The guru picks you.
Mm-hmm. In that practice, one Bhairavi is chosen, an Ananda Bhairavi, and an Ananda Bhairava is chosen. And they're the ones that are to be worshipped. And they get
a man and a woman from the from the group.
Mm-hmm. A man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And worshipped by putting some red dot on their forehead. They're offered food. They're offered meat and wine, liquor. And when you offer these things to a Bhairavi or a Bhairava, then you're offering that to the goddess and the god themselves. Then once after they've taken it, then it's considered a gift back to you. And then everyone else can then partake in the eating of the food too.
Mm-hmm.
Mantras are being chanted, and there's going to be, some people are going to be doing fire worship around the room. There'll be several fire worships going on, invoking the fire energy. And, you know, in the practice of Panchamakaras, 5 M's, if you're supposed to be able to constantly do all the mudras meaning hand mudras or yoga postures, all night long, and have sex, maituna, and be able to drink a lot of alcohol without ever getting drunk, and you're supposed to be able to eat a lot of meat and fish without ever getting any digestive problems. So the energy has to be risen so much that, and the man cannot ejaculate. So the energy has to be risen so much that none of the common things that would happen to a person would ever happen in this room. Like you can't get a bellyache, you know, you can't go to the bathroom, have to go to the toilet and run out and do those things. You can't vomit from drinking too much beer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Those things don't happen in this kind of practice.
And so you're building the energy all through the night. Is that what you're saying?
All through the night. Yeah, this goes on all night long.
And then what's the purpose of that and what's the result of it?
Well, the result is that you obtain, one, you're at a point where all your karmic patterns have completely been dissolved. You're now free of the bonds of this earth. And this is the practice that can help you obtain that. And you can attain moksha with this practice, liberation from the cycle of birth and death.
But But you've done it, and have. But you said you haven't attained that moksha yet. You said you've
right.
done that, and so you haven't attained moksha, or maybe you have.
Right. Like I said, in this life I didn't do it. We've done it before.
Right.
And I've asked them, you know, why did I take another birth? We've done all these things. And at one point your ego got involved. Your ego got, you got very egoistic. You became a very rebellious person, and then you fell down. So you can do the practice, but what you do with a practice, it's like when anyone sits to meditate, once you contemplate after, what you've done with that is really the practice, you know?
Right.
So right. a lot of people can get very egoistic from these practices because you get a lot of energy. And what do you do with that energy?
The energy of orgasm. Like when you're having an orgasm, do you like say, oh, this is great. Look how, not an ego, I'm a sort of ego. Look how good I'm feeling. Look at this great energy flowing through me. I mean, how do you separate yourself from your orgasm? I guess I'm asking you.
Well, I don't really separate myself from the orgasm in the same, I mean, in the way that it's, there's no, really no limit to it. Like, there's no beginning and end of it. It's just like, I guess the intensity now. Like, right now I'm having an orgasm, having this conversation with you. It's like, to be able to talk about this and talk about a lineage and the family and all the work that I've done all over these lives, that itself is an orgasm.
But when you say orgasm, what do you mean then by that word? What, I guess I don't know what you mean.
Orgasm meaning like the intense, blissful experience that one has all the time in tantra.
So the idea is to have it all the time, that intense experience.
Yeah.
And you are starting to have it all the time.
Yeah, it's becoming much easier. Like I said, I would think about him and invoke it and it would come. And then what happens, it never really leaves. Because what happens is, in tantra, when you surrender your ego, then that allows whatever energy that you have, the grace that you have, to always be there, and you can always recognize it. So the sense and the feeling of an orgasm is there. The feeling of your teacher is there, and that's your orgasm.
But the feeling is actually a bodily sensation. I mean, you're feeling it.
There definitely
in your body.
Is a bodily sensation going on all the time. There's some
and that's
kind
what
of
you're
vibration.
Feeling. You're feeling your body all the time sort of tingling. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like there's always some kind of vibrational feeling, you know, in my body. And it's not saying that it wasn't there before, because, of course, if you're alive, there's vibrations going on in your body. But it's definitely at a greater level now, ever since I started getting initiations and things like that.
And you're feeling it. And so that's what you're saying. Your body's actually in an orgasmic state all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have control of it? Like, could you just amp it up now if you wanted to?
Yeah, I could.
And how would you do that?
I would just start chanting a mantra. I could just sit here and do it. Probably right now, I don't think I would want to do it.
Because?
All I would,
because we're on the radio.
Right, well, I don't. It wouldn't be all that dramatic anyways.
No, because also you don't want to put that energy just out to the world. You want to be more selective in that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's just, there's not always the right time for things, because I can talk about it and describe it to you, but actually for me to do it, I might take some time, you know, to sit quietly and all that. But you're right. It's not something that you would there's just some things that you don't want to, I don't want to show to everyone.
Right.
But I can tell you it does happen. Like, all you have to do, once you really start dissolving your ego, it becomes very easy to find that ecstasy at any moment, any time. And I don't even have to really just chant all that much. Like, I'm not chanting it like hour long mantra. I just like think of a Gauri Karpara and just say his name over and over again. And I don't even have to see a vision of him or his face or nothing. It's just pure.
And you do one-on-one initiations with people yourself, so you probably create that in those situations, right?
Like, I'll do some initiations where I touch the forehead, and people have responded and told me that they've actually felt, you know, the energy passing through.
Well, it's also almost a sort of reverse ego, in a sense that just think that you aren't powerful enough to be the divine embodiment as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say that you are, and what you're achieving is, you know, the sharing of that Shakti with others so they can awaken to who they are.
Right, right. That's all it is. It's like the spirit, it is. It's a spiritual kiss.
Mm.
So that people, and just, I just pass it on, really. There was a time where I used to teach a lot of public yoga classes and didn't realize that I was already giving initiations all the time, you know. I mean, so many people teach yoga and we do it all the time. And that's just the beauty of this path, that we can do it. And in Tantra, what happens is it's just very much a lot more concentrated, that's all. You know, the energy is very concentrated. And when one practices the mantra that we give them, whether they're just practicing it just sitting in asana, or they're practicing doing it in sexual intercourse in Maituna with their partner, whatever way that they are going to be able to practice it, once they've had that initiation, there's no reason why it couldn't become fruitful. I don't see why not.
Mm. Is there a mantra you can give that you can give out now, or is that more one-on-one practice?
I can give a couple mantras now.
Yeah,
these ones are just so that, you know, if you're somebody that's trying to find your teacher, because one big thing is that we think in the West that we're trying to find our teacher, we're looking for a master, but your master has already found you. We just haven't realized it yet.
I listened to the tape. It's not like you're looking for the master. It's like the master is waiting for you to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
He's waiting
for you to park. You know, arrive. And so this would be the calling card. You know, the mantra, and a simple one is called would be Om Hrim Guru Prasida Hrim Om. I'll say it again.
Uh-huh.
Om Hrim.
Om Hrim with an H-R-E-M.
E-E-M. Om Hrim Guru. G-U-R-O. Prasida. Hrim Om. H-R-E-M.
Hrim Om. And you would say that how many times?
Doesn't matter. Really, with this kind of mantra, it doesn't matter. Because you could just use this one, chant it until, you know...
Mm-hmm.
Chances until you find what you're looking for.
Right. Okay, what other mantras would you give this?
Another one to awaken absolute reality within inside of you. It's also, again, touching into Guru. Om I'm Brahm, Brahmanda Swarupam, Brahm I'm Phat. Say it again.
Om I'm
Brahm.
Brahm, B-R-A-M.
Mm-hmm. Brahmanda.
Brahmanda.
Swarupam.
Swarupam.
Brahm.
Brahm.
I'm.
I'm. Phat. What's it, last word?
Phat.
How do you spell that?
P-H-A-T or F-A-T.
P-H-A-T. Okay, great.
Brahm, I'm, Phat.
And so those are some of the mantras that you have used in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And they just brought miracles in my life.
Mm.
With those mantras, the miracles were already coming. You know, like I said, it's not like, oh, I finally got the mantra, a miracle came. But, miracles were coming. And the mantras helped to just concentrate all those energies so that the miracles can come, really. That's all it is. And the miracle for a lot of people is to have a vision of their teacher. The miracle was to have what was going on in my mind finally come true. A lot of thoughts were coming in. It was about, I was, predicting the future, and it was just a matter of it just appearing and arriving. And once I started with these mantras, then other initiations came after that.
Mm-hmm.
You could chant it once. I've heard people that have chanted it, you know, less than 100 times, less than 3 times, and something has happened. So it all depends on the practitioner.
Wow. This has been really fascinating. It would be great to do a video interview with you sometime in person. Maybe I'll arrange some workshops. Does Maitreya ever travel?
He hasn't yet. We haven't had any actual, somebody offer, a physical... a workshop to do. And once we do, then I think it'll be easier to get him visa and go through all the logistical stuff. But yeah, definitely if we would do a workshop, to have him and I together would be really great.
Maybe I could help do something like that, like a real Tantra workshop in New York.
Okay.
You know, with
yeah.
you and Maitreya. Okay, but let's stay in touch. We're almost out of time. But there's some other students of Sri Mali out there. There was a guy in Los Angeles that was spreading some
really?
Of his teaching. Did you know him?
No. Do you know his name?
I'll find out. My friend.
Yeah, he has a lot of students here in the West. A lot of disciples here. You know, I don't know many of them because I've just kind of been out of touch of what's going on in America and the West. But I mean, in India, he's really popular. And but there are not that many people that you know that he has chosen to teach Tantra like this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people won't even speak about the left hand path at all. You know, a lot of
because
people
it's so forbidden in India, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's forbidden because. It's just gone underground because a lot of the misuse. You know, there was a time where it was not forbidden. I mean, if you walk into a tantric temple with all the carvings, you can clearly see there was a time when tantra was flourishing in India. But it just, things have changed, so...
In Khajuraho, there's a tantric temple.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the place? Have you been there?
I haven't been there yet, but so many temples. I've been to so many temples that where you can clearly tell that they're tantric temples.
Uh-huh.
Any temple, if you see them on the wall, like I've seen so many with just even little inscriptions on the carvings, sexual practices over there. Oh, and
well, the whole idea of Shiva Lingams, isn't that part of the tantric tradition?
Yeah. I mean, actually, a lot of the people that are practicing their rituals, that's a tantra itself. So a lot of those rituals, which people may say are Vedic, actually are very tantric in nature.
Like which rituals you mean?
You're like worshipping the Shiva Lingam. Like, just idol worship in itself actually is a very tantric practice in that, that's like I was saying, tantra means actual teaching, the vidya or the puja itself. So a lot of the elements are in there. But in modern Indian society, they would never be able to recognize that it came from a tantra.
Mm.
Or if they did recognize it, they wouldn't admit it, you know, because even saying the word tantra is taboo there. Or it's
even saying the word... Wow.
Yeah.
So let's, too bad you're leaving back, but we should definitely pick up this conversation at some point in the future, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Well, keep sending your writings. I haven't finished posting everything you've written yet, but Ravi, my guest tonight, has her writings on newrealities.com under blogs. Are you happy with how that's going with the blogs?
Yeah, I am.
Good. I think we're getting some good responses. I mean, I know there's people reading it, so I think it's great that it's out there.
Mhm. Yeah, so. Because these teachings have been, you know, in secret for so long, and it seems that this is a day and age where secret teachings of all traditions are coming out, you know.
Right.
It's a matter of people finding out where they fit in this puzzle of spirituality. So.
Exactly. That's why I'm doing this show, because I think the times are changing, and because it's as if we're moving to a different vibration, that all the old things are coming out to be seen so we can evolve to the next level.
Mhm. Yeah, and they're going to marry. The old things are marrying in what's going on in the new time today, and something, you know, greater is going to come from all this, something larger.
I think so, and I think that's really what I feel this my program's about, New Realities, is helping to connect that bigger picture.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for being a guest.
Oh, thank you, Alan, for having me.
This is Alan Steinfeld talking to Barabi. And this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Or check the website, newrealities.com. I'm going to just end with this Gayatri Mantra by Deva Pamal.